Up next on Tapestry, we're heading to Dunkirk, New York, where the lake isn't just the backdrop, it's the beating heart of the town. We'll climb the steps of the historic Dunkirk Lighthouse with longtime volunteer David Briska.
You know, with the fog and the waves and the wind and storms and stuff, the ships didn't always make it to safety like they were supposed to.
You needed as many lighthouses as you can have. Then it's off to the Boardwalk Market to meet Aisling Heenan, the Irish transplant behind the smallest pub in New York and one of the most welcoming.
Your success is not yours. It's everyone else's who helped you reach that goal.
And we'll cast off with some professional anglers to learn why Dunkirk is known as the walleye capital of the Northeast.
This year, with the studies they've done, they estimate there's 70 million walleyes in Lake Erie.
That's all ahead on Tapestry right after this.
Compact Science is your gateway to the science of everything in our region. Join host Sarah Jane Gomlick-Green and investigate the geology of Niagara Falls, discover the chemistry in sponge candy, and learn how density affects lake effect snow. Watch Compact Science on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From in-depth reporting to musical masterpieces, dramas, and mysteries to local bands, Buffalo Toronto Public Media delivers it all. Stay informed, be inspired, and join us. This is Public Media.
Welcome to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. First up, on the edge of Lake Erie, a beacon still burns bright. The Dunkirk Lighthouse has been guiding ships since the 1800s. But for David Briska, it's more than just a working light. It's a museum keeping lighthouse history and local military service alive. What got you interested in becoming a volunteer here at the lighthouse?
Well, before I retired, I was a second grade school teacher, and we were bringing our second graders here on their field trip. We started to read this story called Keep the Lights Burning, Abby, which was about a little girl who had to run a lighthouse for her father because her father was not there. Children would get a chance to see what a lighthouse really is and how it works. And when I retired, I said, well, you know, I really need something to do a couple of days a week. I'll volunteer, you know. It keeps me active. It keeps me young. Going up and down the 55 steps to the top of the tower every day is an excellent exercise. It has become my full-time non-paying job.
Talk to me about the origin story of the lighthouse.
This spot was chosen because Point Gratiot does stick out quite a ways into the water. Lake Erie is a very shallow lake, and it's very treacherous with lots of heavy storms and wind and rain and, you know, waves. So they needed a lighthouse here to guide the ships down safely across the lake. There are 2,000 shipwrecks in Lake Erie, so of course,
really?
You know, with the fog and the waves and the wind and storms and stuff, the ships didn't always make it to safety like they were supposed to.
You needed as many lighthouses as you can have. So when was this one built?
The original lighthouse was built in 1826. And 1826, of course, is a very important year because that is the year the Erie Canal was completed in Buffalo. Uh-huh. And so there was going to be a lot more ship traffic on the lake, so they needed lighthouses to guide all of those ships. By 1875, the shoreline had already started to erode away, and the tower itself was dangerously close to the cliff. So they decided they needed to move the tower to a safer location. So it was a round tower that they took down block by block, rebuilt the round tower, put up a Victorian house for the lighthouse keeper and his family to live in. They didn't like the way the round tower looked with a Victorian house, so they put a square tower around the outside of the round tower to
make
it more aesthetically pleasing, yes.
And that's what we see here now.
That is what we see here now, yes.
Let's go for a tour. Thank you.
This house, one of the neat things about this house when it was built is they put a cistern under the kitchen. So they had indoor water in 1875. Several of our lighthouse keepers were here for long, long periods of time. Mm-hmm. One of them was here for 41 years with his wife and his six children. That family considers this their family home.
Yes.
And of course, the children have all passed away by now, but the grandchildren are still alive. And they come back and bring things back to us that were used in the house. So like this set of dishes here was a gift to Mr. and Mrs. Arnold on their 25th wedding anniversary. But yeah, we tried to take the first floor and put it back kind of period so that you get the feel of what things were like. These are the 55 steps.
Let's do it.
Okay, yeah. Your right hand's gonna go on this bar. I can take your left hand. There you go.
All right.
Woo!
Damn. Wow!
So we are 45 feet off the ground, 65 feet off the water because of the 20-foot drop off the cliff. It is 26 miles straight across to Port Dover.
Very cool.
And if you follow the shoreline that way, Buffalo is over there. See the tall tower? That's the M&T building in Buffalo.
Oh, I see it.
Out there. Because, of course, that's the tallest building in Buffalo. And above each window, we have lion head gargoyles. And, of course, gargoyles ward off evil spirits. So that's why all our ghosts have to really be friendly.
Don't worry, we do have a ghost story coming up, but I wanted to learn a little more about what makes each lighthouse unique.
Well, every lighthouse has to look different, mm-hmm. because if all the lighthouses looked exactly the same, the ships would have no idea where they were. Same thing with the light that's at the top of the tower that lights their way. Every light has to have a little different signal so that the ships would know, oh, this is the Dunkirk Lighthouse, this is the Buffalo Lighthouse, this is the Erie Lighthouse.
So what kind of signal did this one have?
Well, originally it had a lens that went around in a circle and it took 45 seconds for it to make a complete revolution. Once they electrified our light in 1928, they made it a blinking light. Mm. So our signal now is a 3 second on, 1 second off, white blinking light.
Back in the 1820s, what did you use to light up the light?
Well, they used whale oil originally. Uh-huh. And then when whale oil got to be too expensive, they went to kerosene. In the 1850s, they purchased a lens called a third order Fresnel lens for our tower from France, because that is where the Fresnel lenses were invented in 1822. Our lens was purchased in 1857 at a cost of $10,000. It is still being used today. If we had to purchase one today, it would cost us $1.5 million to replace this lens.
Oh my
But it is
goodness.
The lens that magnifies the light so that you can see the light all the way to the horizon, which is approximately 17 miles from here. And the lake right across from here in Canada is 26 miles from here.
Really important question. Mm-hmm. Is it haunted?
Yes, it is haunted.
Oh, please tell me more.
When I was here giving tours the first year, I didn't really think much of it. They would talk about the ghosts. They called this the one ghost Charlie. The first time I was in the house by myself, it was actually in February of 2010. And the guy, Dick Lawson, who before he passed away, he was in Florida and he said, the American Legion commanders want to come for a tour. He said, can you let them in? I went in the house, I shut the alarm off, and I'm turning the heat up, and I'm standing in the window, I'm waiting for the people to show up, and I feel this presence, like, lean against me. And there's nobody there, but I can feel it, and the hair on my arms going up, you know, and on the back of my neck.
The hair on my arms
like,
going up
okay,
right now.
Okay, what do I do now?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, maybe I should just tell them why I am here. So I turned and I said, hey, Charlie, I said, American Legion commanders are on their way in. I'm going to be giving them a tour. You know, we'll be here about an hour, hour and a half, and then I'll leave and I won't be back till May. Well, he walked away. You know, the hair went back down
yeah.
and I didn't feel him there anymore. We also had two movies filmed here. The first movie was filmed in 2016, and that is a realistic fictional story about lighthouse keepers losing their job because of automation.
Okay.
So it's called Lighthouse Unmanned. And then in 2018, we had a ghost story filmed here called Widow's Point. The main character is a writer who wants to write a book about a haunted lighthouse. So, of course, he decides he locks himself in the tower for the weekend and things happen.
Charlie comes and visits.
More than Charlie.
That's okay.
A whole, yeah, well, you know, I mean, I don't want to spoil the movie for you, but
no,
it's kind of an interesting story.
Yeah.
And that one was actually produced by a gentleman who grew up in Fredonia. And now lives in Buffalo.
Okay. What are ways that the community can help in making sure that this lighthouse is preserved and maintained and taken care of?
Well, that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. We do have a membership drive every year. We are always looking for volunteers, people who want to come in and give tours or work in the gift shop. In fact, just the other day, I had some people from France on the tour. They were very interesting. You know, I mean, you get people from every, and you wonder, how did they find a little tiny lighthouse in, you know, Chautauqua County? They go to Niagara Falls, and then they start down Route 5, and all they see the sign says, Dunkirk Lighthouse. Oh, let's stop there.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for spending some time with us today. And it's, I know it's getting busy, but David, it was great to meet you.
Well, thank you.
From the top of the lighthouse, you can take in sweeping views of Lake Erie, the harbor, and the quaint 120-foot-long boardwalk market just a short walk away. That's where we're headed next, right after this snapshot of Dunkirk history.
In the late 1800s, the heart of Dunkirk, New York, beat to the pulse of steam and steel. This was the home of Brooks Locomotive Works, one of the largest and most advanced locomotive manufacturers in the United States. Founded in 1869 by former New York Central Railroad executive Horatio G. Brooks, the company transformed Dunkirk from a lakeside town into an industrial powerhouse. The company quickly became one of the premier builders of steam locomotives. By the 1880s, Brooks was producing more than 200 locomotives a year, powering railroads across the United States and the world. At its peak, the factory employed over 1,400 skilled workers and helped define Dunkirk as a center of innovation and opportunity during the height of America's railroad expansion. In 1901, Brooks merged into the American Locomotive Company, solidifying Dunkirk's place in national manufacturing history. Though the whistles have long gone silent, the impact remains. Brooks Locomotive Works helped build America's railroads, and it all began right here in Dunkirk.
What happens when a visitor from Ireland lands in Dunkirk, New York, and never leaves? Meet the woman behind arguably the smallest and most beloved pub in the state, Aisling Heenan. We met Aisling as she was opening up Spike Daly's, one of the many establishments along the Dunkirk Boardwalk Market.
Okay, so originally I'm from Ireland.
Okay.
I am from a little village called Talla, growing up. It's about 7 miles from Dublin City. It was a small village at the end of the Dublin Wicklow Mountains that now has over 1 million people in it.
Wow.
So it's a city within itself. So that's, and I was 26 years old before I left.
What brought you here?
Well, because my mother's sister lived in Eden, Angola.
Okay.
Lord of Mercy, and her, my Aunt Peg. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to travel the States. I was here when I was 18 for a vacation, and I loved it.
Oh.
And, you know, I resigned from my job, and I was like, yeah, I'm going to travel for about a couple of months, and then I'll, you know, look for a job. And I came to Eden, Angola, and I met some friends, and I made it all the way to Fredonia, Dunkirk, New York. So within the first year...
See, you found the best within the very first year. You did not have to go very far.
No, because I liked this. I grew up in a small community.
Okay.
So I liked the small community.
Mm-hmm.
So I loved Fredonia, and then I got to know Dunkirk, and I loved Dunkirk. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to stay here. And I got into the bar business and my first year here. And then I figured out the snow, which I did not like. But 32 years later, I'm still here.
You know, I think we sort of learned to live with the snow.
Yes.
Because the rest of it is so great.
Oh, summer's amazing.
Right?
Spring, summer,
yes.
Autumn, love it.
Those 4 days are fabulous.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So tell me about Spike Daly. And,
okay.
And really, what made you think, I'm going to open up a pub?
Well, my husband at the time, he owned a pub. And I bartended Friday happy hours for him. And we were going out for lunch, and he's like, oh, let's go down to the pier. So we came down, and there was no lunch and no tea or coffee. And so we were sitting there, and this space was empty, and everything else was full. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, oh, I like this. I can see the potential. And I'm like, I think I'm going to open a bar and sell sandwiches. My husband at the time was talking with Bob Earhart. He's a local business guy. And the two of them were having a drink and saying about, you know, they couldn't, we couldn't come to an Irish name for the place. And Bob was like, I've got a good Irish name for you. Spike Daylace. Spike, he was a steel man. His bar was on 3rd Street. And it was back in the 40s and 50s.
Sure.
And he was a very, very quiet gentleman. And if you brought him to your house for dinner, he'd leave a tip under his plate. Oh. He was just one of those.
What a character.
Yes. I liked that. So I wanted to keep the name going. Mm-hmm.
Well, when you said that you wanted to travel for months, this decor makes me feel like someone who has seen the world.
Very much so.
Yes.
Very, very much so. Well, because I was in Rotary, so I did a lot of missionary work abroad. I've traveled all over the world. All of our work, it's all donations. We raise the money ourselves. We pay for ourselves. We don't ask anything.
Okay.
We went over to India. We did polio vaccinations. We were building a dam.
What was the inspiration for you to want to do that kind of work?
At 16, we had Cruxling was the name of it. It was an old folks' home up about 10 minutes away. And I used to go up there and volunteer because I hated the way older people were treated. Because I thought helping other people would help you be a better person.
So a life of human service to other humans.
I love that. But even in our local community, Rotary does so much. We help out all the schools, all the kids who don't have a lot. We'll buy jackets for them in the winter. Mm. We give scholarships away. We work with the college. We do a lot locally. We donate a lot locally. And then we'll go out and water the flowers and, you know, pluck all the weeds and stuff like that.
Community engagement does seem integral to the pub, to the restaurant. Talk to me about the Dunkirk community. It seems like you've done a lot for the Dunkirk community. What has the Dunkirk community done for you?
Oh, my God. So they accepted me in with open arms when I came here. It was unbelievable. It was like as if they knew me all their lives. And they were just so nice and so helpful. And a lot of the stuff that's in my bar is all local. Like they would start coming
like
in.
The knickknacks and stuff. They would start to add to the decor.
Yes, they brought me in fireman's jacket, the fireman hose. And then Bob Earhart, my other local, all the cook signs from the old brewery back in the day, that's all his stuff.
Oh.
And the locals would bring me in like license plates and the Turning Point, which was a restaurant back in the day in Dunkirk. So a lot of the stuff here does belong to Dunkirk and Fredonia themselves.
You are the longest running business on the boardwalk at this point.
Yes.
Okay. What contributes to its success, and what do we need to do in the community of Dunkirk to see it into the next generation as a success?
Well, there's a couple of things. I mean, all the locals support us, and we support all the locals. We donate to everything we can.
Mm-hmm.
We help out the community as much as we can. I do a lot of donations for the fire department. I think the fire department, police department are the most important things in this community because they're the ones who keep us safe.
Let me ask you, you've been here in America how many years now?
32.
32 years. When you think back 32 years ago, any regrets in terms of where you've landed?
No, none whatsoever. There's nothing I would regret. I have met so many people from different walks of life. It's amazing. People from France, Germany, all over Australia, New Zealand, England, Africa. They all seem to find us and pass through here. So it's amazing.
I love that. If you had to say one thing to the people of Dunkirk, what would it be right now? Everybody's listening.
I would say thank you very much for putting me where I am and making me who I am and make me very welcome and successful. Because your success is not yours, it's everyone else's who helped you reach that goal. You can never do that alone. You have to have a lot of people behind you to reach that. And that would be all of Dunkirk and Fredonia. Because without their support, I would not be here.
I love that you are here, and I love that you took a little bit of time to hang out with us today.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
From Rotary Missions Abroad to A Pint on the Pier, Aisling Heenan's story reminds us how community can turn a stop along the way into home. It's almost time to hang up the Gone Fishing sign. And in Dunkirk, that means gone fishing for walleye. That's up next. We'll be right back.
Explore the Underground Railroad's final stop. Learn about how the Latine workforce organized to overcome discrimination and follow the timeline of immigration in Western New York.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there with trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music. It's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Tapestry. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. In a lakeside city like Dunkirk, everything the water touches becomes part of daily life, economically, culturally, even emotionally. But that relationship hasn't always been smooth sailing.
So in 1970, the lake was determined that it was basically, they designated it as a dead lake. That was back in the days where there was actually the mercury and pollution and everything else.
That's Captain Jim Steele from Dreamcatcher Sport Fishing and Innovative Outdoors.
But now it's actually rated into one of the top five in the country as one of the cleanest lakes. I mean, 14 million people get their drinking water from Lake Erie. This year, with the studies they've done, they estimate there's 70 million walleyes in Lake Erie. So,
whoa!
So we have our.
I sat down with Captain Steele, his wife and fishing partner Diane, and local angling expert Zen Olo. But first, we hear from Vince DeJoy, the director of planning and development for the city of Dunkirk, on how the lake and the life in it help shape this community.
Dunkirk has been called the walleye capital of the Northeast. And that was told to me by folks from the National Walleye Tour when they were here for the championship 2 years ago. The anglers felt that this was an ideal place to hold these major tournaments.
So Diane and Jim, would you agree?
We have an incredible fishery. I mean, just not on the walleye side of it, but our trout fishery and everything else that's out there. It just, people travel from around the country just to come here to fish this region and look forward to it every year.
Lake Erie's an ocean to them because the bodies of water, they're
big
fishing.
Water.
It is big water.
It is very big compared to what they're used to out west, wow. Where walleye fishing is popular, but they don't get the same size of fish that we get here.
The 10-pound fish is unheard of for them because they're used to fishing like 3-pound fish. 5 pounds is a big fish for them.
Zen, how long have you been fishing?
Let's see, I'm 77, I think I'm going to be this year.
Okay.
I've been fishing out on Lake Erie since I was 6 with my father. I moved out west to Wisconsin, and I used to come back here every summer to fish with my father. I brought back pictures of the fish that I caught out of Lake Erie compared to what you catch in the lakes out in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
They catch fish like that, and they think that's a big fish. I've brought back pictures of fish like this constantly.
Wow.
28-inch.
I was going to say, for the radio audience, he had his hands out. And it wasn't like your typical fishing story where it started small and got big.
Yeah.
It was clearly like 28 inches across.
28, 30 inches.
Oh, wow. And remind me again, why walleye? Why are they more prevalent?
So the biggest thing is that we have everything that the walleyes need when it comes to basically having their forage, their spawning areas.
What they eat on.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Mother Nature kind of knows what she's doing. Kind of follow along, help her. Don't fight her because she's going to push back. And that's what's happened with our fishery here. Even on the Lake Ontario side, they have to do stockings in spring and everything else.
We're all just so passionate about making sure that we have sustainability. I mean, the biologists are telling us that this fishery right now is absolutely phenomenal, and they don't see it going down anytime soon.
So on the water side of it, everything's great. So let's make the land side of it better to to basically...
And Steve Dunkirk's working really hard at that.
Right. Vince is over here nodding. He's in a grip.
Indeed, I am.
Because you see, well, you
We need partners like the Steels.
Okay.
Someone like Zen who really knows this lake and the history behind it.
Do you think the folks in Western New York know what a gem we have here in Dunkirk?
No.
Oh, that was a really quick answer.
We worked with the Eastern Lake Erie Charter Boat Association on an initiative in 2003 to kind of promote Lake Erie. It was called Come Fish Lake Erie.
Uh-huh.
And we worked statewide to promote this area. Jim had done an interview with a woman from a news station at a local show that had happened. She grew up in Hamburg, which is 20 minutes down the lake here, and she had no idea you could fish or that you could eat the fish that were in the lake.
No idea what a walleye was. And then the other part, she's like, I don't know anybody that fishes. I don't know anybody that owns a boat. I said, that's where the charter side comes in. I said, because then you can go out with somebody that has the equipment, has the experience.
And you most go home us, at the end of the day, yeah, with fish to eat.
Yeah, most of our charters, we clean the fish and everything else. So you go home with your bag of fish ready to go. Yep.
How can the community support its sustainability? We'll start with you, Vince.
Well, we are going to be hosting the National Walleye Tour here the first week in August. There'll be 200 professional anglers with all of their expensive equipment that will be embarking upon Dunkirk, and we'll spend 3 or 4 days here. Maybe some of them will come earlier and pre-fish before the tournament. They have a setup at the edge of the pier where they come in at the end of the day and do the weigh-ins. You know, people are there cheering on, you know, the teams that are coming in, and it's just so much fun to watch. And I think that as that gets bigger, more people are becoming interested in the walleye fishing because they see the huge fish, as they describe, coming in.
So communities can come out, families can come out.
Absolutely, yeah. Right? And it's all free.
Absolutely. It's going to bring more light to the people that are farther inland to what's going on over here. That I think that's going to be the draw.
And it's good to bring the kids out to these events because they can see what's going on. A lot of events, or like the Conservation Club, they have take-a-kid fishing programs where they give them a free fishing pole at the end of it, and they take them out how to cast it and everything else.
So you guys are out here to also pass on your knowledge to the next generation. Well, I want to thank you guys so much for spending some time. It's a little chilly today, but the sun is out, and I just learned so much, and I know our audience will as well.
Thank you for being here.
That wraps up this episode of Tapestry. Dunkirk's story isn't just about fishing, it's about finding home. Whether you were born here or came from across the ocean, it's about preservation, gratitude, and the joy of passing something down. Next week, we head north to Olcott, New York, another lakeside town where the carousel still spins and summer memories linger. What's happening in your town? Let us know by emailing tapestry@btpm.org. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can listen to all our episodes at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm your host, Lynn Bader. Thanks for listening.